Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. I'm broadcasting today over telephone because I'm on the road, and I might be able to have my regular Comrex unit used a little later in the program if it should be working. If fine, you'll hear a difference in the quality of the program. Otherwise, today I'm going to explore a little later with two medical doctors the question of safety and efficacy of vaccines and why political correctness regarding opposing unsafe vaccines and remaining pro-vaccine is really disingenuous. So we're going to explore that in depth. And my first guest will be Dr. Sherry Tinpenny to talk about that. And why is this important? Because right now we are seeing an unprecedented public support for a film called Vaxxed. And the film takes you on a journey of showing you the corruption inside the CDC. Specifically, the entire film really centers around the statements in confidence at the time, though he's being recorded by Dr. Brian Hooker, by William Thompson, where he acknowledges that what they were doing was wrong at the CDC. They were engaged in an active cover-up, that they were engaged in what anyone else in the regular society would be charged immediately with obstruction of justice. They were taking damaging evidence that showed a connection between vaccines and autism in young African-American boys under 36 months of age with the MMR vaccine, causing a higher incidence, over 320% increase in autism. And they destroyed the evidence. Anywhere else, that gets you in a lot of trouble. But why is it that it is no trouble for people at the CDC? Now, I claimed on the air at the time in an interview with Brian Hooker that, in my opinion, Dr. Thompson was not a hero, not at all. He was a villain. And why? And now it seems like what we are led to believe by Brian Hooker in his latest missives, which I'll read you later on the program, that Thompson is now coming out with a new article that has remassaged the figures so, well, there's not a problem. Yeah, but he already is on the record, and it's out there. So we're going to deal with the science and the efficacy of vaccines. Also today, I'm going to spend this time in commentaries. I'm going to bypass our normal health and nutrition segment because I want to talk about chemtrails, the consequences of toxic metals and chemical aerosols on human health by Dr. Sandra Pellegrinier from Global Research. I want to explore something that has been poo-hooed, has been relegated to the junk heap of conspiracy theorists, and that's chemtrails. They're not real. They don't exist. Those are just normal exhaust out of airplanes. The trouble is that's not true. In fact, online you can see photographs from inside the different planes. You can see all the different dispersion equipment, and we've even had several of the pilots, people working this, who've made public statements. So it's not illusionary. These are real. And an article that I will quote from, published in Global Research, says the following, quote, "For decades, we have known that heavy metals and chemicals can cause grave physical harm, going back to Rachel Carson's Silent Spring. We have known and been amply warned of the serious consequences of using or being exposed to these poisons in our daily activities. Thousands of these are well-documented carcinogens. Building on Carson's groundbreaking research, we also know that certain kinds of chemicals can and do disrupt human and animal entire immune systems. Going back 30 years, researchers were investigating what became known as endocrine or hormone-disrupting chemicals and how they were affecting frogs who sometimes had five legs or other characteristics that were not normal. Other aquatic animals and mammals were also affected. Now, these animals were the proverbial canary in the coal mine. In another pioneering work called Our Stolen Future, authors Dr. Theo Colburn and Dr. Diana Damosky, and as well as John Peterson Mayers, clearly demonstrate that 1 plus 1 hormone-disrupting chemicals did not equal 2 is called synergy. Rather, in a nightmare of mathematical proportions, these poisons actually synergistically 1 plus 1, meaning you take one chemical that by itself you don't see major problems with, and you take another chemical by itself you see no major problems with, and you add them both together, and it could equal 1,600 times, that's 16,000%, the original dose. We're also exposed to more than 100,000 chemicals regularly. Most of them have never been tested for human safety. So almost nothing has been done to reduce human exposure to the myriad of hazardous chemicals. In fact, over the past decade, the different administrations have dismantled many environmental laws in existence for over 30 years. And it is to allow corporations off the proverbial hook. And all this information on the dangers of hormone disruption is now more widely available on the internet sites. It still is not well known by the average person who gets news mostly from mainstream media. And most of these highly toxic chemicals are invisible and therefore easily off our collective radar, with a high stress level created by the deliberately orchestrated financial crisis where millions have lost their jobs and homes. A degraded, collapsing environment or serious health problems are not priorities, especially if very little is reported in mainstream news. Now, this disaster scenario is part of the larger picture of what Naomi Klein writes about in her book, The Shock Doctrine. We have so many major crises, one after another, that it's hard just to keep up with the ones that are confronting us today, let alone have time to read and consider the toxicological health ramifications of massive amounts of thousands of heavily toxic metals and chemicals that are poisoning our entire food chain and thus our own supposed health. We're at the very top of this wrecked food chain. Now, however, there's another far more insidious layer of toxicology that is not being addressed at all in any mainstream media. It's a corporate-controlled news media, and it's affecting our very survival. It is, however, being addressed more and more by independent researchers who have supported evidence to back up their internet reports. For more than a decade, first in the United States, then Canada, citizens have been subject to 24/7, 365-day aerosol assault over our heads made of a toxic brew of poisonous heavy metals, chemicals, and other dangerous ingredients. Now, none of this was reported by any mainstream media, not once. The U.S. Department of Defense and the military have been systematically blanketing all of our skies with what are known as chemtrails, which are actually called stratospheric aerosol geoengineering. Now, these differ vastly from the usual plain contrails that evaporate rather quickly in the sky. Chemtrails do not dissipate. Rather, planes fitted with special nozzles release aerosol lines in the sky that do not evaporate. Multiple planes are deployed, flying parallel or even in a checkerboard patterns overhead. And soon the sky is blanketed with many grayish-white lines, miles and miles long, although this is changing. And at first, these lines are thin, but soon they expand and in a short time merge together. And our once blue skies, well, you can look up and you can see these grayish-white toxic hazes that blots out or greatly diminishes our usual sunshine at different places in the country or over cities. Now, military and commercial planes are involved in more than 60 recent secret operations. Last year, when I flew across the country, I saw United Airlines jet flying below us at 37,000 feet, spraying a black aerosol that went for miles and miles across the sky. This clandestine program now includes aerosol spraying planes in North America, Europe, Australia, and New Zealand, all NATO countries. Hundreds, if not thousands, of people have called and written their public officials to get answers. And replies from U.S. and Canadian officials are not forthcoming. Or if they do reply, it's just dismissed out of hand. this remains an ongoing deliberate cover-up. No one is held accountable, and while we continue to be poisoned daily, this is not the first time, however, these citizens are being used as experimental laboratory test subjects. The U.S. government and its military have a very long and sordid history of using us without informed consent in this illegal manner. As Carol Palat notes, quote, the U.S. military has been spraying chemicals and biological weapons in open-air testing over civilian populations since the 1940s. They called it vulnerability test. This is not a controversial statement. The military has admitted in this practice on many occasions, and there's plenty of documentation from the government to corroborate it. There's also documentation of intentional experimental releases of radiation on civilian populations. Unfortunately, this information tends to surface long after it could have saved lives or eased the suffering of victims, end quote. Now, just as an aside, in October of 1988, I published a cover story article in a national magazine on the secret testing of Americans, mainly in the military and people like in St. Louis, where they were never told that they were being tested. For example, now the government has actually acknowledged, the Pentagon has acknowledged that, yes, they did over 1,900-plus experiments in just radiation. Now, because I was doing over a year's worth of research, I was actually able to reach one of the doctors who at the time was a young doctor and admitted to me that they were feeding radiation on toast to sick children in hospitals and then measuring how much stayed in their body and how long it took to get any of the radiation out and how much damage it did, for example, to their kidneys. And when I asked, did you get permission? Did the parents know that their children were being tested with radiation? The answer was no. Did you know how much of a dose of radiation a person could have before it caused cancer? No. Was there any follow-up to see whether or not a person would later on develop any adverse effects from the radiation test you gave them? No. And this was not just one episode. So I said, then why'd you do it? Because that seems like an awful, awful, immoral thing to do. And he said, well, I was a young physician at the time, and I really wasn't getting a whole opportunity. In the military, you don't question the authority, the people who give you a command, you honor that command, or you end up with disciplinary problems or thrown out. And as a result, I just went ahead along with it, as did everyone else. I then found a study that had been done on patients at Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York. There was a physician there, a very respected physician, who had been injecting live cancer cells into the legs of pregnant women to see whether or not the cancer would take. Nothing happened to him. In fact, he left there and went into a very prominent position at the Windstar Institute in Philadelphia, where they do DNA research and genetic testing. He had also, I found out, been doing the same work at the poor person's hospital in Brooklyn, for the indigent, and he was only found out because on a Saturday round, the doctor saw this doctor in a ward and asked who he was and what he was doing. He said he was giving vitamins, but it wasn't vitamins. He was injecting cancer into poor people, all to see whether or not they would develop cancer. The trouble is, there was no follow-up. Nor was there any care for the patients who'd been injected. There was a hearing, but it was a quiet hearing, and I got all the records of it. So here we had one of America's, if not the American, a prestigious cancer institute where a scientist was using patients for human experimentation. I found hundreds of studies where Americans did not know they were being used as guinea pigs. There was one study where a ship was going up and down off the coast of San Francisco, releasing a particular type of biological agent. It was a bacterium that they would later claim, when challenged, oh, it was inert. Not true. In fact, immediately upon releasing that, within 24 hours, some patients who were in a hospital came down with the same identical lung infections of that bacteria, and the doctors were surprised because they'd never seen it before. It was a weaponized bacterium. Now, one of the sons of the person who was infected, who would later go on and die, sued the government, and that suit was thrown out because the government would not give him permission to sue. But that didn't stop him from doing his homework and finding all this out. I interviewed the son, got the information, and I publicized this. But they also were releasing whooping cough in areas of Florida, and suddenly the spike in whooping cough would go up. They would take a bacterium and put it into light bulbs, go into the New York City subway system, and drop these. They wanted to see the dispersion level, and they had a special car outfitted, a Volkswagen, that would disperse these chemicals without anyone knowing it, driving around New York City. Again, they wanted to see what would happen if the enemy came in here and did this to us. But the trouble is, these were not inert agents. They did not inform anyone. They went ahead and took it upon themselves to believe that the American public were human guinea pigs, just like the Tuskegee experiment. The most vulnerable people were prisoners and the military. They would test things on the military. And they did this repeatedly. Now, this is a specious, speculative, or conspiratorial insight. This is actual documented, government documented, because all this was found out under the Freedom of Information Act. And I published the article, and it caused quite an outpouring of anger and debate. And I went around the country debating any government official or anyone who participated in this. And then we started finding out that the government would then give contracts to multiple universities to do the same research. So it wasn't one scientist doing some work over in a corner by himself. It was hundreds, if not thousands, of scientists and physicians were testing the population. And no one did any follow-up. No one compensated the victims. No one even tried to locate the victims to see what happened. And at the time, I spoke with Dr. John Goffman, arguably the world's greatest authority on the negative impacts of radiation. After all, he was the co-discoverer of plutonium. And he was an MD, PhD, and he had written definitive textbooks on the danger of radiation. And he said to me, quote, "Gary, there is no such thing as a safe dose of radiation. One single X-ray of any sort, dental X-ray, chiropractic back X-ray, medical X-ray, is enough to cause cancer and will cause cancer later in your life, depending upon how long you live and what other exposures you have." So he set the standard, and he was honest. So imagine now that we've exposed people to unnecessary mammographies, unnecessary radiation experiments, all in the name of preventing disease, none of which is true. But here, there's a whole section now where we have a long, sordid history of using the American public, including children, as guinea pigs and not acknowledging it. So the next time someone says, "Oh, that's just conspiratorial," no, it is not. Therefore, over the past decade, independent testing of chemtrails around the country has shown a dangerous, extremely poisonous brew that include barium, nano-aluminum-coated fiberglass known as CHAFF, C-H-A-F-F, radioactive thorium, cadmium, chromium, nickel, desiccated blood, mold spores, yellow fungal mycotoxins, ethylene dibromide, and polyfibers. Barium can be compared to the toxicity of arsenic, and barium is known to adversely affect the heart. Aluminum has a history of damaging brain function, and independent researchers and labs continue to show off the scale levels of these poisons in people's bodies. And numerous tests have been done to verify that these poisons are off the scale in their toxicity. They are documented in our water, in our soil, and in our air. For more than 10 years, researchers such as Clifford Carnicom has been valiantly and systematically reporting on the various detrimental aspects of these aerosols and what they're doing to our entire environment, as well as our blood. And various Skywatch groups also have been carefully documented and diligently reporting about these daily assaults. And with all these poisons surrounding our health, it is not surprising to see a dramatic increase in illnesses. Now, how much these play in the illnesses, we do not know. So we can say with no certainty which of these combinations, and remember, synergy is 1 in 1 can equal 1,600, not 2, because a previously toxic or non-toxic agent by itself or minimally toxic can be extremely toxic when combined with other agents. And these are combinations that they're using, not single agents. But what we can say is that coronary heart disease is now the leading cause of death in the United States, and it's been increasing substantially. This year, we will have over 670,000 die. Asthma and upper respiratory illnesses are common. We also have matters of particulate pollution in the air, and particulate matter consists of tiny particles, 10 microns or less, and 1 micron is about 1/70th the thickness of a single human hair. So these particles can lodge in the deepest part of your lungs, and over a period of time, they can damage lung function. And this kind of pollution that we breathe daily can and does cause various upper respiratory illnesses and coronary heart disease and premature aging and death. In fact, the scientific literature, the peer review literature, shows that particulate matter around the world, especially in China and in India, where they do not have the pollution control, and where you may be living right near a major polluting area, kills over a minimum of 1 million people in northern China alone. That does not take into account when you're in the capital of China, where you cannot see 5 feet in front of you for weeks at a time, of what that does to long-term complications from existing diseases to take you with a heart disease and put you into a critical situation, or asthma or COPD, and put you into a life-challenging position. In which case, then, if you do die, it is never reported that your death was from the heart disease or acute COPD with complications from air pollution. It's just that you died of heart disease or lung cancer or lung conditions. So right now in California, they have an enormous amount of airborne particulate matter from China alone, and that is not cool. So we have to understand that we already have air pollution, and these are also capable of engaging in endocrine disruption. And we have brain injury today. In fact, even the increases in preventable illnesses are seeing a challenge because of what we can call aerosol contaminants that can deteriorate our cognitive function. A person living with airborne pollutants is going to be far more likely to have inflammatory response inside the brain, and that can destroy the mitochondria and neurons and synaptics and dendrites, all of which then impact us. And aluminum is a major component in these aerosols. And although it's our planet's most abundant metal, our body has no biological need for it. And Pesticide Action Network, North America, listed as a toxin to humans, including a carcinogen and reproductive and developmental toxic agent and a neurotoxic and acute toxicity. Yet aluminum is commonly used in vaccines, deodorants, antiperspirants, over-the-counter medications, soft drinks, beer cans. And remember, aluminum leaches from the cans. It's used in baking powder, cake mixes, processed cheeses, and other food additives. And over the years, aluminum accumulates in the brain and the tissues, and to a lesser amount, the bones. And it causes brain degeneration, dysfunction, and damage. And due to the blockage and reduced blood flow and oxygen to brain arteries, the brain shrinks as brain cells die, and this causes dementia. It includes like emotional outbursts, paranoia, forgetfulness, and memory loss, and speech incoherence, and irritability, diminished alertness, and changes in personality, and poor and bad judgment. All of these are on the rise. In fact, more than 5 million Americans have brain deterioration right now, and we're going towards a far bigger number than that of those that have the symptoms but have not been fully and officially diagnosed. If you take all the people who have any form of brain problems, you're looking at probably 20 to 25 million Americans minimally. So you do not want any airborne particulate matter, especially aluminum, that can exacerbate this whole process. And yet they have found it in chemtrails repeatedly. And then add to this already highly toxic body burden is the U.S. military's use of aluminum in its aerosols, and it is used because of its electrical conductivity and durability and lightweight. The U.S. Air Force reported that it released, quote, 2 million to 6 to 7 ounce bundles of chaff, and these are laid by military aircraft from 15 to 50 miles in length. And another unanswered question, why are you doing it? What is this for? More often than not, if they have to, are forced to give an answer, is to try to help with climate change and to reflect the sun's rays back into the atmosphere. Nonsense. That's absolute nonsense. If they're doing it for that, then they're engaged in the worst kind of pseudoscience. But there are also no discussions on it. They've taken it upon themselves to do something that can injure us, cause brain damage, heart problems, and be persistent in our environment without our permission, without our discussion. So the next time someone says, oh, chemtrails, they're nothing. Well, no. Just ask Dr. R. Michael Castle. He is a noted polymer chemist. He is an expert. He's written extensively on the hazard of chemtrail. And Dr. Castle has also written a groundbreaking document, the Universal Atmospheric Preservation Act. And this document has been in Congress since 2008, but it's tied up in committee. And it explains what these chemtrails are and why we should not be engaged in funding these. And finally on this issue, you have this. It is my feeling and my belief that we need a small, highly functional, accountable government. We should only have bureaucracies that have overview and accountability to the public, where there is no lobbyist or no special interest group outside the public that is allowed to have any input. And that's not what we have. What we have tonight, today is Levitan. We have this giant metastasis cancer, and every single major and important governmental agency that could have and at one time possibly did serve our interests have become a malignant threat to our very survival. That's why we have totalitarianism. That's why we have militarization of the police. That's why we have spy agencies listening to every phone call and have been doing it for a long time without our permission. That's why the telephone companies were illegally allowing the National Security Agency to listen on our calls and collect them in bundles. So they passed a law to say, okay, it's no longer allowed, but we will not challenge anyone who broke the law before this. Everywhere you look, our government has been engaged in building a bureaucracy that serves the interests of those smart enough to feed off of it. There are over 200,000 corporations that are gaining money from the $1.5 trillion through the national intelligence and security militarization complex each year alone. $3.5 trillion was spent this past year on the medical industrial complex, and yet how few lives were saved outside of emergency medicine, which is exemplary. Everything else fails and is actually a part of the problem. So we have to differentiate what we need and what we need to pay for that would help us and protect us versus what we have that is out of control and run by those who manipulated the system to their advantage and against ours. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to take a brief break and come back with my guest. Please stay with us. Maybe you want to give me kisses sweet, but only for one night with no repeat. And maybe you'll go away and never call, and a taste of honey's worse than none at all. Oh, little girl, in that case, I don't want no part. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. For the remainder of our program today, we're going to examine a simple issue. We are not looking at the politics, the profit. We are not looking at the controversies of groups that claim that their children were damaged or themselves by individual or combination of vaccines. We are not looking at the exemption of all liability by vaccine manufacturers for the toxins in their vaccines. Instead, we're looking at something that should have been examined long ago. something that has not been examined by the National Institutes of Health, which is the overall umbrella organization that has, with under its umbrella of authority, the National Cancer Institute, the CDC, the FDA, the U.S., the National Institute for Allergy and Infectious Disease. All of these organizations engage in vaccine research or act as the authoritative bodies, and behind that is the National Library of Medicine and the National Academy of Sciences. To a person, they claim that vaccines are safe and effective for every given individual. There are no exceptions. There have been no vaccines that have not been effective, and there have been no unsafe vaccines except to individual, extremely rare, and very genetically vulnerable individuals, to which they have then set up a compensation program that they have made it extraordinarily difficult for a person to get compensated. But the media is in complete in alignment, and they have been told vaccines are safe and effective, and if we did not vaccinate, then we would be putting the larger public at risk. And some of the people who are pro-vaccine have gone to such extremes as to suggest that, in one case, one pro-vaccine advocate who's popular in the media, that parents should have their children taken away from them and be turned over to the state if they don't vaccinate. That's how irresponsible they are. So then the question is, are they right? Well, the only way to know that is you must ask people who have no vested interest, who are probably pro-vaccine to begin, but then decided to do something extraordinary. They did their homework. They looked at the actual science, all of it. Now, to do that will take between 10 to 20,000 hours of research, or what would be equivalent to doing a PhD's worth of research, and very few people have the time nor inclination to do that. We would rather be spoon-fed by our organizations, the official guilds, and those who are eminent in the field to tell us what the truth is, and we simply are good soldiers and we go forth with that. But what about the people who've done that homework? One of them is on the line, two of them are on the line now. We're going to go first to Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. She is a physician, incorporates integrative medicine, her practice of treating allergies, childhood illnesses, women's health issues, and she is the founder and lead medical practitioner of the Tenpenny Integrative Medical Center in Middleburg Heights, Ohio. She has authored several books on vaccines, including FOWL, Bird Flu, It Is Not What You Think, and Saying No to Vaccines, a resource guide for all ages. And she's also done a DVD, Flu and Flu Vaccines, What's Not Coming Through That Needle. And it's an invaluable resource for educating people on influenza. And her website is Dr. Tenpenny, that's CENPENNY.com, as well as TenpennyIMC.com and TruthKings.com. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you, Gary. Thanks for having me on.
There's two ways I approach this. First, I look at the current movie, Vaxxed, which is an extraordinarily well-done film on the corruption inside of the CDC, the lies and obfuscation, and mainly based upon one man, Dr. William Thompson, one of the lead scientists at the CDC on vaccines, and how he did a mea culpa. He confessed to an outside person, Dr. Brian Hooker, who recorded his conversations. And then he, when this went public, he then became a whistleblower and now is kind of stepping back from that. But the movie, which was banned, then became a very popular film. But everyone involved in that film are pro-vaccine. In fact, Robert Kennedy, all of them go out of their way to proclaim how pro-vaccine they are. Now, I have a question. I know that you, Dr. Nancy Banks, Dr. Tony Bark, I know of Suzanne Humphreys, have spent between 10,000 to 20,000 hours each researching. I've spent over 15,000 hours. And I believe that once you look at the incomplete body of scientific evidence, especially the independent evidence, and then you deconstruct the science of safety and efficacy they have, no reasonable person with a science background could be pro-vaccine. Your thoughts, please.
Oh, I'm in total agreement with that, Gary. In fact, it's somewhere between aggravating and infuriating to hear people say, I'm totally pro-vaccine, but, and then spew off, you know, paragraphs worth of information about how harmful vaccines are. It seems to be very disingenuous, and it's playing the card that they want to be politically correct. And I think it's far past time in our society and around the world to do away with the political correctness about being labeled as some quack or some kook if you don't believe in the faith of vaccines, and to call it like what it is, that vaccination is a 200-year mistake founded on false premises and poorly presumed science from Jenner from the very beginning and from even far back before that. In fact, the smallpox vaccine, if anybody studies it historically, the only reason it was really advanced during Jenner's time was for cosmetic reasons. And then by the early 1900s, we didn't have epidemics anymore, even though we continued to use the smallpox vaccine routinely in the U.S. until 1972, and then we use it still today in our military. We are contaminating the human DNA. We are contaminating human genomes. I mean, mercury cuts off all the sulfation pathways, depletes GCMAF, which is our number one immune system modulator that helps to keep our immune system in balance. All the viruses from the live virus vaccines are horrible. And so when people say things like, oh, well, I'm totally pro-vaccine, but... I think it's, again, I'll repeat myself, it's disingenuous. It can almost be fraudulent. I mean, how can you possibly say, I'm so totally pro-vaccine, but I'm against a particular ingredient, or I'm against a particular form of the vaccination schedule, when in truth, any one of the vaccines can cause an enormous amount of genetic and epigenetic dysfunction in any human being, regardless of their age. In animals, too. I mean, we always talk about children and adults, but we forget how harmful this very heavy vaccination schedule is to our friends called our animals, our pets.
Let's go through the vaccine ingredients, the additives. Certain additives and ingredients in vaccines are toxic, and all you have to do is look at the toxicological literature, and they contribute to a wide range of illnesses and autoimmune disorders. And what is given far less attention to is the actual viral and bacterial components, whether a live virus, viral vector, or antigen, and then the genetic debris and residues found in vaccines from culturing the pathogen and their adverse risks. If you can take us on this journey of showing us the viral and bacterial components, we're not now looking at mercury and formaldehyde and polysorbate 80. We're looking at all these other actual ingredients that are never discussed and how they impact our genetic makeup and the RNA and the neurological and immunological risks associated with introducing pathogens and pathogenic traits into an undeveloped child's immune system. Take your time on this, please.
Okay, well, I think that even beyond the ingredients, we need to, one of the other things, and I like the way that you introduced this segment, was that there were many things that have never, ever been examined by the CDC or the World Health Organization, the Gates Foundation, Gavi, any of those that would just choose to inject all of us with every possible vaccine, is how it disrupts the human microbiome, how it disrupts the gut flora, starting even while the fetus is still inside of the mother, now that we are beginning to give all of these vaccines to pregnant women. And we are causing a lot of disruption and setting up of failure of the immune system from pre-birth now, not even at the time of birth. And several of the other, what I feel are quite disturbing, vaccine ingredients that aren't mentioned a lot are bovine serum, which have two known viruses in it that cannot be bred out and are contaminated in every vaccine in which bovine serum is used, such as tetanus and DBT and chickenpox and a long list of others. Those viruses have been shown to cause illness in children. The bovine diarrhea virus that is in bovine serum, which is cow serum, which also includes cow DNA being injected into your child or into you as an adult, has viruses that are known to cause illness in humans. The same with chicken albumin and egg protein and gelatin and monkey tissues and human DNA from cells from aborted fetal tissue. And the vaccines that have gelatin in them are, I'm surprised that more vegans haven't gotten upset about that, or the egg proteins that are in them. And that the vaccines that have the human albumin in them, I believe, like ProQuad is one of them, the MMR vaccine, the hepatitis A, I believe that those are very contributory to all of the autoimmune diseases that we're now seeing. Because if you inject my albumin into you, Gary, it's looked at as a foreign protein. So your immune system turns on and does what it can to try to get that foreign protein out of your body. Well, now we've created an antibody against albumin, which is a normal protein in your body. And so now that my albumin that has been injected into you has been swept away, we've created an antibody that can now attack your own personal albumin. So the list, there are actually more than 60 vaccine ingredients. And if each person gets all of the individual vaccines, they will get a dose of all 60-plus of those vaccine ingredients.
Let us take a look at what happens in the normal development of an immune response and those who develop natural immunity, and look through the immunization evolution of breast milk helping a child that the mother decides not to vaccinate, and then take a look at that same child where the CDC is now recommending that the mother delay breastfeeding because the breastfeeding interferes with the activity of the vaccines.
Isn't that just that statement in and of itself just insane? I mean, it's more important to make sure that you get injected with something and create an antibody, that the antibody is nothing more than a marker of contamination. It has never been proven to protect you. We call it a protective antibody, except for the fact that many people that can get their blood tested for what is called a vaccine titer, which is a measurement of that antibody in your system, and can get the illness anyways. So it's more important to delay the bonding between the baby and the mother through breastfeeding, more important to delay the important nutrients that come to the infant through breastfeeding. It's more important to do that than to possibly interfere with developing an antibody from the injection of a vaccine. That's just ludicrous.
They claim that the proof of efficacy the vaccines work is that if a person is given a vaccine and does not come down with the illness within, let's say, a year or two, it was the vaccine that was the cause of them not having the disease. I would like to know what science anywhere in the world would accept that for anything else. If I told you that if you took an orange each day and you didn't get a cold, that it was absolutely the orange that must receive 100% of credit for you not getting a cold, they would say, well, that's stupid. That's just pseudoscience. If I said vitamin C, 1,000 milligrams a day, would prevent a cold, and those who took it didn't get a cold, you have to give all the credit to vitamin C. That is unscientific. And yet, if a person gets a vaccine, every single person that gets a vaccine does not come down with the condition, is then automatically resulting in 100% positive for the vaccine prevented that condition. There is no science supporting that whatsoever. Also, there is no science supporting that the titer is protective. There is no way to determine at what person's titer, at what level, because we've had persons with no titers not come down with the disease, and the very high titers come down with the disease. So where can they justify that you have immunization if you have a titer response to the vaccine?
Well said. Well said. That was exactly correct and very well said. You can't prove a negative. It's like if I get, I can't say anything better than what you just said, Gary. That was exactly spot on.
Then let's explore the idea that vaccines are safe. If you have a group of children and you give them a certain amount of, let's say, exposure, not every child will come down with the same equal exposure to a virus or bacteria. Not every kid in class comes down with the flu, but maybe 10% or 20% do. Not every teacher gets sick. Not every mother or father that is exposed to a virus or bacterial infection in their house will get sick. Some will, some will not. Some to one degree, others to a more severe degree. It all depends upon the immune response that is naturally in there. Why don't we ever give credit to building up a natural immune response and compare that to antigens versus saying, if you didn't get sick, it's the vaccine, and the vaccine cannot make you sick because We have determined its safety. Explain then how they've proven the safety of any given ingredient, since the toxicological data clearly states, with over 1,000 studies alone in the peer-reviewed literature on the toxicity of mercury, and that there is no safe dose of mercury. None. Not even a part per billion is considered safe by toxicologists.
Well, I don't. First of all, there is no science to prove safety, and there's very little, and there's no science to prove efficacy. Like you said, if I took an orange every day and tried to credit my health to eating oranges, they would say that's crazy. So I think that a lot of what's happening, Gary, I mean, between what I've done and Dr. Humphreys and you and Dr. Stephanie Cave and various people over, there's been a small group of us that have been decidedly dedicated to this issue to inform and educate the masses over the years. And I believe we're reaching a tipping point. I believe that we are that the 100th monkey is going to show up and it's going to tip. In fact, there was a study that was published in 2011 that showed that if a whole bunch of people, like millions of people across the country, tried to change the vaccine paradigm one at a time, that it would take tens of thousands of years to change the paradigm. But when you have a small group of very solidly dedicated people like you and me and the handful of others that you've named, continually educating people, that it takes about 10% of the population, 10% of any given population, to completely upend and change the paradigm. Well, if you do the math on that, you know, there's about 200 million people in this country between the age of 18 and 65. So 10% is about 20 million, and I would say there's at least a million parents out there that are completely unvaccinated children, and probably several million more that have partially vaccinated children. So we're looking at maybe 15 million people across the country that if suddenly they realize that what you've said for years, what I've said for years, what we've said over and over again, vaccines are not safe, they're not effective, they don't protect you, they absolutely cause harm, they're based on faulty science and contamination of the immune system, and it's time for the technology to go away the same way that bloodletting and leeches did, and years ago when they used to drill holes in people's heads to let out the bad spirit called trepanation. The technology needs to stop. It needs to go away because of the destruction it has caused to the human race.
One final thought. The areas concerning a lot of people are the interference with the body's natural immune system, because vaccine interference with human microbiome in the gut is critical to our immune system, and viral shedding and transmission after vaccines is common. They don't tell you that if your kid gets a live polio vaccine or live flu vaccine, they're shedding out of their nose and their mucus all over their hands, the utensils, doorknobs, telephones, and you can infect a lot of people in your home or around your environment. And the rise in vaccine-resistant strains, like pertussis, and this is from over-vaccination. And just like we've overdosed on antibiotic, now we have antibiotic-resistant conditions that people are dying by the tens of thousands in the United States, and viral vaccine affecting those who already are immune-compromised. You don't. When you go to a doctor, you go to a pharmacist, you go to a nurse to get vaccinated. They don't take a detailed medical history and ask, do you have any immune compromised illnesses now? They never ask that. And as a result, they just vaccinate everyone from a little 4-year-old kid to a 400-pound overweight adult with the same amount of vaccine. And I have noted in the medical research alarms about microRNA interactions with vaccines. I'd like for you to explain that and how do vaccines alter gene expression, which is independent of DNA sequencing.
Well, they just do, and there's a plethora of science that shows that. Like I mentioned before, that the MMR creates a hyperimmune response based on the microbiomes and the microbes that are present in not only in your gut but on your skin, in your respiratory tract. It creates a hyperimmune response based on what microbes were present at the time of vaccination, which ones were present or which ones were absent that were supposed to be protective. This is an environmental issue and of the highest order, and that mercury that is still in the multi-dose flu shots it cuts off something called sulfation, and sulfation pathways are what it supports your entire immune system. Almost everyone is sulfur depleted, and when you use a vaccine that cuts down the sulfur and the sulfation pathways even more, you can't metabolize your amino acids. You have very abnormal genetic expressions, and the epigenetics and the nutrigenomics are not taught appropriately in medical school at all. And that we think that, you know, one of the more common genetic defects that more people are familiar with is a gene called MTHFR, which is a methylation gene that helps to methylate your folate and your B12. And that more than 60% of the population has at least one of their four MTHFR genes knocked out just genetically. And now you add in aluminum and mercury and all the other ingredients that we've briefly touched on, you create this entire cascade of genetic and epigenetic expression that is abnormal. And that what happens then, you know, first all of this disruption happens in the gut, and then it happens in the brain, and the brain doesn't develop its neurological connections appropriately because it can't appropriately use iodine and glycine and several other amino acids. And now you've got disrupted everything, disrupted human. And so all of that, Gary, when we use these vaccines, is done to the human race in order to avoid these childhood illnesses, which essentially consist of a cough, a fever, a rash, and some diarrhea. And many times I've said to parents, would you rather, if you had the choice between your child, who you love and you don't want to get sick at all, but you had a choice of a fever, a cough, a rash, and some diarrhea versus a lifetime of speech therapy, sensory integration disorder, OT, PT, all kinds of neurological problems, asthma, autoimmune diseases, which would you choose? And most parents will say to me, well, when you kind of put it that way, I guess I'd rather take my chances on keeping my child healthy and maybe avoiding these illnesses or perhaps contracting them so that as they get older, they have a much more robust and healthy immune system.
Love, thank you for those insights. Let's go over now and say hello to our other panelists. Dr. Gary Coles is on the line now, a board-certified physician practicing for many years, and also took the time to do a lot of research on vaccines. Nice to have you with us, Dr. Coles.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me, Gary.
Would you please give us your perspective on the safety and efficacy of vaccines, the proof or lack of proof thereof of each one?
Yes, and I'd like to get to know your other guest who I came in a little bit late, so I don't know her name, but would you please share my email address with her so we can...
Yes, I will. It's Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and I'll see that she gets your information.
I've seen you a number of times on YouTube, and I'm really impressed by your work.
Well, thank you. Well, thank you so much.
I'm kind of a late comer to this. I've always been suspicious of the pharmaceutical industry and all its aspects. And I grew up, as most of us, most of you have, in an era where we were only getting three or four or five or six shots per infancy. And I got out of family practice before the huge influx of multiple vaccines for children. So I never really was responsible for giving these to children. However, I've done a lot of research and reading and secondary involvement in families who have had damaged children. And so that's kind of piqued my interest. So I've done a lot of reading and research, and it's ongoing. I've never published a book on it, so I can't say that I'm well-rounded in all aspects of vaccine toxicity, but I know that they are ineffective, unresearched, and not safe. Unequivocally, I agree with your presumption that they are totally unsafe and totally ineffective. But we've been sold a bill of goods, and this is a political and a corporate issue that is suppressing the information that we have so that we can't get it out on mainstream media or television or media or newspapers, etc. I do my best, and I'm fortunate to be able to write a weekly column for a local alternative news weekly. So I feel fulfilled in being able to express the express my beliefs on paper and publicly. So that's good. But I don't get any national exposure. And
Dr. Coles, I'm going to we're coming near our program. I'm sorry you were late getting to us, but I'm going to ask you five simple questions. Would you just give us a yes or no to these five? Do you believe that there's such a thing now as a safe vaccine?
No, none of the ones that they're offering are safe. No.
Do you believe there's such a thing as an effective vaccine?
No, I don't think so, knowing that, I'll say no.
Do you believe that it's better for a mother to breastfeed and then develop a natural immunity for the child or to get an artificial immune response to a vaccine?
Oh, breastfeeding by far.
Okay. Do you believe that the average physician could know the truth that you and Sherry Tenpenny and Tony Bark and Suzanne Humphreys and Ken Stoller and others do, but they do not want to take the time and energy and also put themselves at risk if they come down on the side of being anti-vaccine?
Oh, it's a big threat for average, and plus they're uninformed. Yeah.
Okay. Do you believe that with over 1 million new cases of autism spectrum disorder diagnosed this year, that means 2 million parents, add into the millions of other parents, that as Dr. Sherry Tenpenny said about 20 minutes ago, we are reaching a tipping point where so many parents have had damage to their children after trusting in the doctors and the vaccine safety and efficacy spiel, that we may have a complete pushback where parents finally rise up and say no more?
Well, no, I'm afraid I have to say I doubt that we're at that tipping point. So many of the parents that have damaged children are in denial, and they have trusted their physicians to say, oh, it's just one of those things. I'm sorry.
Okay.
There's a lot more work to be done.
I respect your input on that. My final thought is I hope that people see the movie Vaxxed. I think it's an extremely educational and moving story. But here's my problem with that movie, and it's all the people associated with it, from Robert Kennedy Jr. to Andrew Wakefield, who we have supported tremendously on the show. I don't know if you're aware of it, but I did a one-hour debate with his antagonist, Brian Deere, in England in defense of Wakefield. People can come out of the movie angry at what they see as obvious collusion, corruption with inside the CDC, and still remain absolutely pro-vaccine. They just want to make sure that those bad people or those people are held accountable, but there is no such thing as challenging the underlying safety and efficacy of vaccines. They just want safer vaccines and less of the bureaucracy. But I do not see how that's possible that a movie is going to make the argument of challenging safety and efficacy. Final thought, Sherry Tenpenny?
With that, but it is a place that where people who are actually even pro-vaccine can start to see the corruption and start to see, and that can start to plant the seeds, and I think that has great value.
Good, let's hope so. Dr. Coles, final thoughts?
Yeah, if the vaccine development and the search for a safe vaccine is in the hands of the pharmaceutical industry and the CDC, there's no hope.
Okay, there you have it. Thank you both very much for being with us. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on the next program. Have a nice day.